last night with going through our mentoring look, and we were talking about the practical aspects of the vertical dimension, and how does one get into it? How does one start? And we were talking about the mentor initiating, and I said I need to just finish this off, but just before I finish talking about that, let me just add one, pick up on the mentoree from coming up. If you need mentoring, how do you initiate it? How do you start? And that should be on the next page following. And here it is where you begin, first of all, to identify your need. Take a look and see in your own life. I've mentioned this before, and we have all these various needs. You know, perhaps it's something in my life I'm starting. It's a new task, new challenge. Maybe it's an area of my life that I happen to be in right now. I'm working through things, and I need a coach. I need a teacher. Maybe I need some sharpening in my discipling. The basics of following Christ just need to be sharpened. Perhaps I've never really been discipled in a way that I could do it with somebody else. Well, just get a hold of somebody. And that's what I mean here. You just identify that particular need. Maybe it's a counseling or a word. And some of us here have even interacted over this time. You've just something that's come up, one of the subjects, it's triggered something. It's, hey, let's just talk. And sometimes that's all it is. And it's just so important to just think of that. Then you take that need and you begin to pray. Lord, you know this need. And you know that I just need somebody that can help me in this area. So you go and the word's open to you, but you just need one of those people. You need a Paul in your life, or you need a Barnabas to come along, or just maybe a short occasional one-time meeting even, or a couple times meeting. Don't be afraid. There are people out there. It's really interesting. We'll talk sometimes some of the older guys in the Navigators, and we'll be chatting a little bit about it, and we'll, you know, maybe it appears to others that we're busy, or we have perhaps a position they're not thinking of bothering us or whatever, and we're sitting up there saying, boy, what an excitement it is to be involved in some of these young men and women involved in our staff. And we'll go out there sometimes and be along with somebody, and all of a sudden this person will come up and very apologetic say, well, I know you don't have much time, or and the joy that it is just to sit down and spend some time. And usually it's some area of our life that perhaps the Lord is walked us through and taught us something about that we can just, God-given resource, passing on. I had one staff come up to me, and he comes from the ghettos of New York City, grew up there, where he watched someone come in and kill his father. Two of his brothers were knifed, and it was just a terrible background. He grew up in the Italian section of New York City. So it's been a tough life for him. Well, he went into the military, met the Navs. One of these guys led him to Christ. He began to grow, disciple, got out, went to college, went through college, met a girl while he was there, got out, and now has three kids, and all of a sudden he's trying to be a dad, trying to be a husband, and the same thing I was telling you about the other day. He just didn't know. He was trying. It was a good, things were going well, but there was also no grandparents that he could take these kids to. And he really wanted grandparents, so he came up to me. We were chatting one time, and he says, you know, I know this probably isn't anything in your area, but he said, my kids need grandparents. And he said, I just was wondering if you knew anybody who's looking to be a grandparent to somebody. Now, he lived way down in Alabama, and I was way out here, so I didn't qualify. But just a day before, one of our older senior staff, we were chatting about their life. Their kids were all gone. They were wondering about what the Lord would have them do in addition to their ministry. We got talking about mentoring, and their name just came to me. So I just told him, I said, listen, why don't you know that couple over there? He says, well, yeah, we know of them. And they lived over one state over. And I said, why don't you just go up there and ask them if they, you know, you're in the market for just an older couple to just get around their family and teach it and, you know, just be there and they could ask questions and just something that would be meaningful. He did. He just went up there, and they came over. And just don't tell him, though, you want them to be grandparents. So he didn't. Went over there, and I never found out what happened. But about 2 weeks later, he called up, and he said, hey, we went over there, asked them, and he says, oh, well, listen, why don't we just stop by after the conference? We've got time, and stop by your house. So they did, and they stayed two nights, and they just literally fell in love with each other. And they've been back in 2 weeks. They've already been back and stayed a weekend. And the kids were just calling, you know, oh, they're coming, you know, and they were calling them Grandma and Grandpa. So here's, you know, a person wandering out over here, wondering how God, you know, wants to use me at this stage of my life. Here's a fellow, this family that desperately needs some older models in their life. And that's the way it is. And the very need that you're feeling in you or sensing in you, somebody else would be delighted to just walk with you through that period of time. Not as an expert, not as a chief person of all those subjects, but just someone who can just share their life, walk with you. Keep thinking of that. There are not too many people out there that just turn you down. So then you pray about it, you begin looking around, ask people. Ask somebody. Go to a pastor or somebody who's in your little world of involvement, if it's the church or it's in a community ministry or some type. Ask somebody, say, listen, I was thinking about this or this area of my life that I, or in my job or my ministry, I just could use some advice. Do you know somebody that might know something in this area? And they might have someone. And so you go there and you could say, hey, could I buy you lunch someday? Could I have a breakfast with you? Met this older couple in our own church, and they were there, and we were chatting a little bit in Sunday school, and I just happened to, I was teaching for a little while of how to end well, and how to end life well. So we were talking about some of these areas, but I happened to mention, you know, you need to get involved in giving your life away. Don't take all that you got with you. You know, don't leave it. When you go home to be with God, it's not going to, you know, all that's going to die. So give it to somebody. So this couple came up, and they were probably, late 50s, and I said, you know, our kids are gone, and we don't know what to do, and, you know, we're not teachers, and we don't have a whole lot, and, you know, what are we going to, you know, I'm not sure what to, you know, we don't teach in Sunday school, we just don't have a lot that we've learned, but somehow we want to give our lives away. And I said, well, listen, do this, spot a couple somewhere around their 30s, go into the church and just get your radar moving. Just go right there. And just anyone, maybe with little kids or whatever, just spot one. And as soon as you spot one, go up to there and just say, hi, introduce yourself. And if they're at all friendly, just say to them, listen, we're trying to get to know some of the younger couples, younger families in our congregation. And we're wondering if this afternoon you can come over for lunch, or maybe plan it next Sunday, come over for lunch, and bring the kids. You know, that's always a... I remember the first time with our four kids, we got invited to come over and bring your kids, you know. We always said, they invited us, and we'd say, oh, great, you know, well, we'll try to get a babysitter. Oh, no, bring your kids. We, really? Bring your kids? You know, they were good kids, but just, you know, usually it's, they think, four kids, wow. They did. The very next Sunday, they planned to put a little bit extra on, and sure enough, they went up to a couple, and I said, you know, maybe even this, for lunch, you have planned for lunch? And they looked at each other, and they said, well, we're just going to get home and throw something together, so we'll just come on over. So then he said, well, what do we do when we get them there? I said, well, just talk to them, ask them questions, how they got married, their background, a little bit about the Lord, if they, you know the Lord or whatever. Just find out about them. But then come to the place towards the end of the meal or while you're sitting around having dessert and just say, listen, one of the things Mary and I want to do is we want to pray for you. Could you tell us two or three prayer requests that we could pray for you? And they look, so he says, okay. He says, well, then what? He says, well, then copy down the two and get the prayer request. And then about Thursday, you call the husband. Call him at work or somewhere and just say, hey, I've been praying. How are things going? And I said, the rest of them, from there on in, you're on your own. He said, what happens? I said, just watch. So he did. They did it, got the couple, got them home at lunch. The right time, he kind of nervously... we'd like to pray for couples and for you, and I wonder if you have a couple prayer requests. Well, they said, well, I don't know. Well, just anything. They talked about it, and he gave them three. They wrote it down. They prayed, he and his wife. Thursday, calls the husband, tells him, asks him, how's it going? They got chatting a little bit. What do you think happened? This kid, this guy started to talk more about those needs. And you know what this older guy did? I mean, he almost slipped out. He says, well, maybe we could get together for breakfast and talk more about this. And you know what this guy did? He said, I'd love it. first person, older person, that took interest in his life. So they got together, and they've been meeting and talking and going for months. Just a great time, and usually it's just dad things, work things. This guy had done a lot in business and was interacting with him. It was just a wonderful relationship. Now, if you ask the two, are you being mentored, maybe they didn't even know that there was going on. So a lot of those things happen, they don't even have a label. But we're talking about a little bit more deliberate. Go get it. In this area, you have a need, go find someone, talk to them. Initiate the relationship, just like I said before. I've been looking for someone that could give me some advice, or I'd like to ask questions about this area. That's usually as the mentoree coming to a mentor. And don't threaten him. Just say, well, I was looking for an expert in this area. He'll just say, oh, no, I can't do that. You know, or it may be a mom, a younger mom, asking an older mom. My mother, as I said before, she's 88, brought up 6 kids, all these different things. And so we'll sit and talk to her, and she did a great job. And my wife had her out. This was about 10 years ago. And we were talking, and so she says, well, Mom, I've got all the women of my Bible study coming over. And we're going to have, coffee and tea and a little bit of time. And I want you to share on raising kids. She goes, oh, no, I don't know anything. I can't do it, No, Mom, you don't even have to say anything. I've asked the women to just write down, each have 2 questions. In order, they get to ask one of them, and we have time, you'll get the second one. And that's all they're going to do. Oh, well, I'm just not a speaker. No, we're not asking you to do it. Just answer the questions, Well, I'll tell you, they met at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I came home at 5:30. They were still going. It was like, who's that when Smith Barney speaks, everybody leans forward. Is that the right? Do I have the right firm? Oh, E.F. Hutton. When E.F. Hutton speaks. See that? Well, anyhow, it's really, that's the way it is. You just turn these people into mentors. And those are things that are blessings. So you share the desire. Clarify expectation. That is so important. Clarify expectation. Like, for instance, well, how often should we meet? What do you mean, ask questions? Should I come prepared? And you knew normally, if I were the mentor, you said, listen, you don't prepare anything. Let's just get together. I'll have the questions. Well, great. That's non-threatening. But see, once you get into it, you'll begin if there's a click there. Now, let me just show you just some of the next little part on that. Back to that other page, I think it's 5, where it lists how to initiate. The second one is the dynamics. Dynamics, it says, what 3 dynamics. These are those 3 dynamics, mentoring dynamics. And the degree to which these are here in these relationship, these 3 are here, the degree to which you will have empowerment. In other words, the more they are here, so attraction, what's attraction? How do you say that? Just somehow there is affinity. There's an interest. Somebody that you look at, and usually like attracts like. Have you ever noticed that? We're drawn to people with the same values, same job, same kind of interests, same desires, and that grows. And your best mentoring relationships are normally where there is attraction towards one another. Now, what would attract a mentoree towards a mentor? Just a couple thoughts. What would attract a mentoree looking up, he's looking for a mentor, what would attract him? Could be friendliness, seems like he's open, okay, all right. You'd have to find that out a little bit, and the more you do, the more you'd be attracted. Sure, godly or just seem to know what he's all about, some expertise in that area. Just a lot of those kinds of things. Now, how about you turn it the other way around? What would attract, if you were a mentor looking to really invest in some young men and women around you? What would attract you as you got to know them? What would draw you closer? Teachable. Yeah, very teachable. You want to look at that. And that usually is tested. Any mentoring, any relationship I get into or somebody we want to start, I usually give them something. I have these little kind of starters. I have a good tape on a number of subjects. Different tapes. I have little books. And what I'll do is often give that person a book or I'll ask them to read something. When you get finished with the tape, when you get finished with this, and usually ask them a question, give me a call, we'll get together. Out of 10 people, how many do you think, my average, out of 10 people, how many call me back? One? Up a little higher. I'm operating about 3 or 4 right now. That's all there is. So you see, there's often a lot of enthusiasm, but sometimes it just doesn't stick, doesn't go very far. And you've seen that. You've done it yourselves, probably. I have. I've heard a speaker sometime, or I've met somebody, and, boy, I was really interested. We're talking. I said, hey, I'd like to get together again. And, you know, and, oh, great. And then, boom. You know, it's just, my wife, she's even tougher. She makes the person write her. She never gives anything out. She just, in other words, the person really has to make an effort to show that they're really interesting. They want to learn. And so that's important. Just a little something. And usually that helps it. Responsiveness. Responsiveness is an attitude. An attitude of what? Learning. Just the learning. It's an attitude of learning. So the person is willing to, wants to learn. There's a responsiveness there. These are things you look for. You look for in a discipling relationship. You look for in a mentoring relationship. You look for all these kinds. You want to see some responsiveness. And so there's some progress and going along. And I was just thinking, we were talking, Dwight and I were just chatting a little bit about the experience he had. And the person was, there was no responsiveness as they were going along. And there needs to be some of that. Otherwise, what do you do if you've decided to meet and you're meeting a couple times and the person doesn't respond? What would you do?
Hey, you.
No. What would you do? Well, you could try a different way. Sure, you could just do that. But just if you've set up good expectations, then you can come back to it. And so, you know, I said, we've committed ourselves to empowerment, mutual exchange of resources, and we're sharing things, but it doesn't seem like this time is meeting your needs. He said, well, what do you mean? It's just going great. I said, no, well, I'm giving you some things, and it just, you're not doing them. Oh, yeah, well, you know, I've been busy and everything else. I said, well, listen, why don't we just clarify again that what accountable relationship we want. Usually I've asked the guy at the beginning in the expectation is, what kind of accountability would help you? Isn't that non-threatening? You know, you just say, all right, we're going to have accountability in this. No, just say, what kind of accountability would help you? Help you make the, you know, to do what we're talking about, to grow, to be empowered, to change. And it's very, very non-threatening. So he says, well, yeah, we could talk, chat a little bit when we come back. Okay, great. So in other words, when we each take on a task, or if I give you something, then we'll just talk about it or just come back. We'll expect each other to have it done. Would that be fair? Yeah, okay. So now we've established it. Well, so then once we wander, then, you know. Also, another thing I do is always put about a 3 or 6 month check into it. As you're going along, just say, as you're 3 months into it, doesn't have to be traumatic, or just say, hey, we've been meeting for 3 months, 6 months. How are we doing? How are we doing? Are we getting out of it what you just got into this with? And how do you think we're doing? Is it happening? Is it good progress going on and some change going on? See, that's important. Just to keep coming back to that. Keep coming back. Because, you see, I've met with some people, and sometimes after 6 months or even 3 months, we've really done what we need to do. And so what I usually do is say, hey, why don't we just back off or whatever it is, or let's just thank God for what he's done. And we'll call each other if we want to activate this kind of relationship again. Or if it's a discipleship relationship, then it's going to go on a lot longer. It's good to make a check, see how we're doing. Then maybe he says, well, it's not so well, going so well. I say, well, what do we do to strengthen it? How could we strengthen it? How can we make it stronger, more impacting on each other? See, these are the kinds of things that you do. And if you don't do them, all of a sudden, you know, you may have a high expectation. He or she could have a lower one, or they don't meet. And so you're frustrated. When do you find out that there were expectations that were never expressed? When you're disappointed, right? And that's why it's great to just talk about that. I do that with a lot of friendships sometimes. We're going along and I'll say, are we getting out of this friendship what God might want us to get out of it? You know, is there anything that we might want to change or strengthen to just make us stronger friends and have a greater impact in each other's lives? Oh, I wasn't thinking about that. I was just kind of, we're watching TV together, you know, or I'd say, well, let's, you know, we think about it. And boy, it can move a relationship down to a deeper level. You wouldn't do that to all your relationships, but you do that with some that you feel, hey, we're in this. We're serious. And then accountability, I just mentioned that. I define accountability as a sense or a commitment to be mutually responsible for one another. A commitment to be mutually responsible for one another. That's important. So we hear a lot of talk about accountability, and there's just lots of it. We could spend a whole time on that. But boy, that's very strong. And have this little formula. Commitment plus bank equals life change. What's the blank? Accountability. You see, if that's not there, how many times do we commit ourselves to go on a diet, change this, do that, and it never goes anywhere. And we just, 2 weeks later, a week later, we forget it. But if you get an accountable relationship into that, life change. You know the only other way you'll get life change? And this comes from experts that study this. I've read it several different places. The only other motivation to make change is crisis. So either a crisis. You know, how many times have you promised your spouse you're going to do something, particularly the men? You know, we promise, yeah, I'll change, I'll do that. Yeah, I'll be home earlier, help me do this. And all of a sudden, the fifth night, you've done it again, and all she says, she's in a heap of tears. Oh, you know, honey, what's wrong? Says, you promised, but you never do it. You know, boom. And then all of a sudden, geez, I better do this, you know. Or maybe it's even worse. You've been meaning to get a budget together and something, you know, stop, you know, fiddling around with your money and get it together and just really take this seriously. And all of a sudden, you overcommit yourself and you're looking at, wow, we're in trouble. Crisis makes a change, doesn't it? Well, this is the way to avoid crisis. Just do this. Okay, that just kind of brings us there. Now, back to this one, I want to talk about the horizontal dimension. Friendships, peers, co-mentoring. Now, what I'm going to do is just, I'll take a blow-up of it so I can write in there. You don't have that, so you've got to write small. So, okay. Just need to jump over there. Let's just talk a little bit about these kind of relationships. These are important to us. And many times you cannot get a vertical relationship. And as I mentioned before, as you get into your 30s, 40s, and on up, peer relationships begin to make an impact on us. And the deeper they are, the more commitment we make to them, they can have the same effect as a mentor. They won't bring the expertise, but begin to study together. For instance, peers. I had, I think I mentioned this before, there are many of projects that I've wanted to get onto or develop myself in those areas. I just find two or three others that want to develop in that area. And we make a little covenant to the next 5 months to meet together and read some books and do something together. Now, some of us have formalized it. Bobby Clinton, I've mentioned several times, we wrote Connecting With. He's a professor. So we designed these learning clusters, peer clusters, and offered people, if they want to learn something about the several different subjects we had set up, they could form a little 5 or 6 man group, and we would give them the books and some of the things that they should work on, and they could go after it. We've tested it, and it's really worked well. A lot of stimulation. You read it, but the motivation is there. And then each of us begin to experience different things. We get on in our 30s and 40s and we gain some experience, and peer relationships can mean a great deal. But let me define a couple of these here for us. Out here, these are just lines of friendship. I call this as acquaintance. This is an acquaintance. Now, these are people, what do we get from our acquaintances? Well, a lot of it, we just simply get some information. Just information about our world. We meet these people at work. We meet them all over. We even meet them at church, different places. We don't know them real well, but we interact with them. Perhaps we talk to them. We know their first name. We know their, known them for a while. But we never just go beyond that. It's just basically an acquaintance. And that's really, it's an important relationship. We have lots of those. But the next two levels, and they're always just don't know it exactly that way, but, you know, they're broken up so defined, but it just helps us to look at these this way. The next one is what I call is the friend. Here we start getting into the friend relationship. Now, friend is really important. We need these people. In our spiritual lives, two verses begin to activate two truths here. First, Hebrews 10, 24, 25. And that says, let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together as a habit of some, but encouraging one another, and even more as you see the day approaching. That says we get stimulation and we get encouragement from these people. Both aspects, important to us. We also get some sharpening in the stimulation area. Proverbs 27:17, as iron sharpens iron, so a friend or friend one sharpens another. So you get some sharpening, you get some development. Proverbs 13:20 says this, he who walks with the wise grows wise, but a companion of fools suffers harm. And that's true. These people begin to impact our life. Stimulation, encouragement, sharpening. George Herbert said this, the best mirror is an old friend. Isn't that true? Openness to those around us. We get a good reflection of ourselves. Here's where we begin to build some kind of impact, accountability, development. And this peer level, particularly starting here at the friend, will begin to get some stirring in our own personal life, in accountability. Even though you've never made a contract or a covenant with each other, even at this friend level, you'll begin to get some accountability. You have these people, these friends, in a Bible study, a church, you've gotten close to people in the neighborhood. They're all out there. They're good people. And you need them in your life. Very important for you. You all have a lot of these, a number of these. Now, when we talk about friends, how do you, people say, well, I've been looking for friends. I need good friends. How do you get good friends? You be a friend. That's the best way. I was talking to somebody and he says, boy, this neighborhood is just so unfriendly. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, I've been, nobody's come up to me. Nobody's brought anything. We've moved in. We've been here a couple months and nothing. So I said, well, have you tried to be a good friend? Be a good friend. You go out. You go over there. You can talk to them. And they did. And all of a sudden, bang. So to be a friend, I've written down a couple things. One is you need to believe in them. Believe in them. You need to encourage. Be encouraging. Isn't it great to be around someone who's an encouragement to you? You know, how many people do you know that are encouragers? I don't know who takes these statistics and how they survey them, but they asked a bunch of people, what do you like most in a friendship? And they said, well, we like encouragement. And then they say, well, how many friends do you have that encourage you? You know what they came up with, what the statistic or, a ratio? 1 out of 9 of friends are encouragers. Now, this isn't the friends level. Isn't that? But you think back at it. I was at a Bible study, came the other day, a bunch of guys, I know they've been around. We stepped in, and of course, this, men were just kind of old shop talk, different things. And, they're talking about politics. They're talking about the president and all the bad things there. We're talking about the health program, how bad that is. And, boy, if this happened, we're talking about how business turned down, and that's bad. And, we're in there, and I just didn't have to be saying anything, but I just noticed. And all of it was negative. So I just suddenly said, hey, is there anything good happening in this world? I said, what do you mean? What's wrong? And I said, well, listen, you guys have just been talking about all this negative stuff. And, it's all out there. I said, hey, let's encourage each other. And they all looked at me and says, hey, this guy, get him out of our group, Just kiddingly. But, it's just interesting how we can easily lapse in to all the negatives that are happening in this world. Now, there are a lot of negatives. You don't have to walk around like a Pollyanna, but it's important. We need support and we need trust. And let me tell you, the greater that trust grows, the greater the friendship, isn't it? It's so important. And so we move from this. We see these verses. We begin to experience it. But it's be good. I want to just spend a little bit of time on this person here. Here I call the close brother, or the close sister. And everybody needs them. Married, not married, we need these kind of people. Daniel Yankelevich, the famous pollster sociologist, he took a survey of Americans. 70% of Americans say they have many acquaintances and they have some friends, but very few close friends. 70%. I've made some of my own survey to find out, as I've gone around, talked to people over the last 3-4 years, to find out how many have a close friend, and a close brother, a close sister, and I'll define that in a little bit. Now you think, how many have that? Of women, how many? Out of 10, what do you think? 9, 4. Okay, I'll hold it. Okay, how about men? Out of 10? 2, 1. Okay. Let me define it, and we'll see how you define there. This is an important relationship because the stimulation, this truth comes over, and so does encouragement. But there are two other dimensions which we pick up in Hebrews 3:12-14. This is an important one to understand because it brings two new dimensions to it, two very important dimensions for us. It says this, "See to it, brothers or sisters, that none of you has a sinful, unbelieving heart that turns away from the living God. But encourage one another daily, as long as it is called today, so that none of you may be hardened by sin's deceitfulness. We have come to share in Christ if we hold firmly to the end the confidence we had at first." And then it goes on to talk about the nation of Israel, how they sinned and they got away and they wandered because they forgot that they lost that confidence. So there are two things, two dimensions here that are added to it. And one is protection. We pick up protection in this one. Protection, and it's doubled also in encouragement. But it's in a different kind of encouragement. It's encouragement to what I keep saying is, keep believing. Keep believing God. It's saying, watch out. Look at it. Careful for the unbelieving heart. And don't let sin be deceitful. Protecting each other. And keep believing. That's a strong one for us. It's this relationship that you'll see in Ecclesiastes 4:9-10. Two are better than one, for they have a good reward for their labor. But woe unto him who's alone if he falls, for he has not another to pick him up. Absolutely crucial to us, particularly in this day and age, to be able to have someone that not just can recognize once sin perhaps in our life or discouragement in our life has taken, not only taken root, but is bearing fruit. We can see that. But it's having a friend that can see it as it goes into our life. It is just starts, that can nip it in the bud. And this person, this relationship, is marked by trust and safety. A safe relationship. Boy, this is crucial to us because we've got to have this. There's openness and honesty in this area. Openness and honesty. Now, we see this really clearly in the Jonathan-David relationship, which I'm sure many of you have seen as you've read through the Scripture. And it starts in 1 Samuel 18. It says this, "After David finished talking with Saul, Jonathan became one in spirit with David. He loved him as himself. And from that day, Saul kept David with him and did not let him return to his father's house. And Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself." We see three things. One is, there was one spirit. There was an affinity there. They were kindred spirits. They liked each other. Now, what did Jonathan and David have in common? What did they have in common? What did Jonathan do as a young man? Remember in 1 Samuel 14? Remember the good old Philistines again? They're over there. The Israelites were staring at them. Nothing happened. Stalemate. And Jonathan turns to his armor bearer and he says what? "Let's go over. And God is not limited to save by many or by few." 1 Samuel 14:6. And they go over, just the two of them, climb up this cliff, get up there, and as soon as the Philistines see them coming, he calls out, and God just moves through that step of faith, and they all think, uh-oh, they're all coming now, and they ran. And they just started a tremendous victory. Jonathan was a warrior. Jonathan was a man who had courage. What about David, just three chapters later? 1 Samuel 17, what does young David do? Takes on Goliath. He was a warrior, man of courage. You see, these kind of relationships need some kindred spirit, a spirit like, hey, we're together. Have a common interest. Now, you don't need to be a warrior, but you may have an interest that's really strong that you share. A shared interest, some commonality that you build. That's where that relationship is. Where do you usually find those people? You find them in this category. If you're looking for that one, but most people, these are good relationships, excellent relationships. But you've got to have at least one or two in these in your life. Just one. How many relationships can you expect that you'd have in a lifetime in this area? It's very few. The most I've ever found anybody that's had is five. Over a period of time, because they've changed different times. But usually just one or two. I was talking to Chuck Swindoll a couple years ago, and I said, Chuck, how do you not believe what others say you are? See, how do you stop from believing what other people are saying you are? Because everybody thinks Chuck Swindoll walks on water. I mean, he was there at the Promise Keepers, you know, and he came in with a Harley Davidson, and everybody was cheering. It was wild. I was kind of embarrassed, but anyhow, this guy coming in. And so Chuck, you know, he is just a real genuine guy. He was terrific. So he gets up there and preaches and all the rest, but we've had him here. He's a good friend of the Navs, and he's just a great guy. But you see, everybody is going around. This guy could start believing what other people are saying about him. And often we put these guys up on pedestals. So when I asked him that question, this is what his response was. I have three guys in my life that know I'm not what other people think I am. And I said, well, like what? What do they do? He says, well, we meet once or twice a week. But he says, those guys listen to my messages, not just to be blessed, not just to get taught. But he says, the last week, for instance, I got back there and we got together just the next day. And he said, one guy said to me, hey, look at this. He says, I counted 16 I, me, or mines in your message. Chuck, you are self-centered. Careful. It's a seed. It's just a seed. Get off it. Get off it. At first I kind of thought, ooh, come on, give me a break. You know, he went back and he looked back in his message. He went back and listened to it. He said, you're right. I, me, or mine. And it was just, you know, it's those kind of people. You see, whatever it is, it sees the seed. And that's when that relationship is so close. It's just so important for us. But take a look further in that relationship. You see, they had affinity for each other. They loved each other with a good, healthy, solid love that they sacrificed for each other. But the third thing is they made a covenant. They made a covenant with each other. Now, I don't know whether you've ever done that. But I've made a covenant with several different ones. I've had four of these in my life so far. One of them is right here. And a couple of them, we were together for several years, and business took them to different places. But we still keep close contact. But you got to have one close by. Close by that we see each other and get to know each other. But we've made covenants. Even to the point that two of them, if anything happens to me, anything, because I fly all over, or if anything happens to them, I will drop whatever I am doing. I don't care where I am in the world. I will fly there. I will be there. I will take care of his wife. I will take care of his kids. I already know what his heart's desire is for his kids. I will be a dad to those kids. I'll be an uncle to those kids, whatever they need, whatever age. And they will be to me. They will also take care of my house. They will make sure it gets paid off. They will not let Phyllis go out and get on the poverty, whatever. They will pay off. They will watch Phyllis the rest of her life. They'll take care of her. Make sure the car is okay. Make sure things happen. Do you have a friend like that, guys? How about your wife? Your wives, of the kinds of things. Do you have someone that really, you don't need another woman to run in and pay your bills, I guess, but But do you have that safe relationship that you can really talk to? You see, we need to be absolutely close and sharing, and my wife is probably my best help in growing. And just even my presentation last night, you know, well, our little agreement is don't hit me right after it's over, you know. Don't walk in. And so we got a little agreement. So the next day, and then, you know, this morning she said, "Sweetheart, I saw two things you could, you know, you just need to work on. Now, I won't tell you, but just between us." Well, you see, you know, 20 years ago, if she would have done that, hey, I don't need it. You know, it's just, well, I was just one of those typical guys, you know, and it's still hard. Boy, it's still hard, but I've learned. I got to, because she's my best input. But see, there are other areas of my life that she doesn't tune in on, because she's just not a man, as much as she loves me. And there are other areas that we can talk as men, and also other areas that she can talk with a couple close. She has two of these gals, and they are just so close. And I'm so thankful they're in her life. She's so thankful these guys are in my life. She says, "Listen, I get insecure when you're not meeting with Terry." So Terry Reid is a guy that, you know, he's the guy in my life. Just 2 days ago we met. We ask hard questions to each other. We do that all the time. We have a lot of fun. We laugh. But then he'll say, you know, he knows a couple issues I'm dealing with and a couple other areas. So we're always asking each other personal questions. But we know our patterns. We know where we're weak. He knows when I travel, the times. That guy is traveling all the time. You know, one time I got to Hong Kong and he called me up. He says, "I got laying in bed and I just got thinking about you and praying for you." I said, "I just better call you, because I leave a phone number." And he called. "How you doing? Getting tempted or anything like that?" And I said, "No. As a matter of fact, I'm so darn tired because you just called me, you idiot." You know, no. Woke me up in the middle of the night. But, oh, that was great. We talked. I told him what I was going to be doing. He's praying. He's praying right now for this. And he knows how to pray. He knows how to just think that. You see, it's so important to us. Well, see, that's the kind of relationship you have to have. Affinity, then a commitment to love each other, and then make a covenant. Whatever fits. You know what our covenant was? Is that we're covenanted to help each other become all we can be as in Christ, as fathers, as husbands, and in our jobs. And that's our basic covenant. And anything that looks like not Jesus, we will challenge each other. We are going to pray for each other. Now, in the midst of that, I share very specific things with him and he with me. But let me just say one more thing that just this kind of relationship will give you. 1 Samuel again, but just jump over the 23rd. I'll read it. You don't have to look to it. The 23rd chapter. And it's about verse 15. David was in trouble. You know, his father, the father of Jonathan, Saul, was the king and running after him, trying to kill him. And so he got in a difficult place. It says, while David was at Horish in the desert of Ziph, he learned that Saul had come out to take his life. And Saul's son Jonathan, remember, covenant, went to David at Horish and helped him find strength in God. Who can pick up that you need to be strengthened in God in your life? That's the kind of relationship you need. So, you know, we had a great time, the two of us, the other day, and so I've already gotten a call back. You know, that area we prayed about. How's it going? You feel good? Yeah, great, thanks. Got to go. That's all it was, just a phone call. That's all. Just to keep in touch. We keep praying for each other. Now, let me just tell you my own experience with that. The very first time, I have had close relationships, but I'd never had a commitment. And I got studying this about Jonathan. And I thought, you know, I'd like to have this kind of relationship. I really need this kind of relationship. And I was about in my, about 30, 35. And I decided, we're going to do this. I've made kind of commitments with each other. But this was the first time. And it happened with a guy named Tom. And Tom was a Navy captain. That's like a colonel or whatever. But he was a diplomat assigned to Bonn Embassy. And so he came and he just was 2 years old on the Lord, hadn't been discipled, got around the NAVs a little bit, but just as he was leaving and he was starting to get in discipleship with a guy, with our NAV contact, he said, "Well, when you get over there in Europe, look for a navigator. And he says, "Well, I'm going to Bonn. Do you have any there?" And the guy looked up and he says, "Hey, yeah, this guy Paul Stanley's over there." So he comes in, he checks in, he says, "You Paul Stanley, I want to be discipled." I said, you know, you don't get many phone calls like this. Well, Tom was my age, and so we did. We started Disciples, so it was a vertical relationship. So we started meeting the Word, we started to memorize quiet time, the whole works, and he's growing, and I'm growing. But meanwhile, we're noticing we really like each other. So we start playing racquetball together, and, you know, and as long as I'm winning, I liked it. But we got after it. Well, you know, we were about equal in ability. We just got after it and have fun, and we'd laugh. We'd, you know, go hard competitors. Then we'd jog together. We'd do different things. Then he started to get to know my family a little bit, and I got to know his kids. And this relationship started to go. Well, after about a year, we just found we liked each other, and he was really moving in discipleship, and he was, of course, a mature person. So this stuff was going right in. So I said to him one day, I said, Tom, I'm really enjoying this relationship. And God's really giving us a friendship, isn't he? He says, yeah, sure is. This has been great. I said, I think we ought to move it from vertical like this to mentoring to like this to peers. He's, oh, man, I still want to learn a whole bunch from you. I said, well, you know, we can still do that, but let's just do it as peers. He said, well, what difference does that make? We're both his friends. I said, well, it'd make a big difference because I just need a friend. I need somebody who will walk with me, somebody who will be involved in my life. And I showed him this Jonathan passage. I said, like that. He said, wow. He said, well, yeah. I said, well, let's just pray about it and think what kind of covenant we'd want to make. So we did, and we had met a couple times. But then about 2 weeks later, I said to him, well, Tom, what do you think about this relationship? Oh, yeah. He says, I think it'd be great. And I talked to my wife. She thinks it'd be great, too. So I said, well, I talked to Phyllis, too. And I said, I'm ready to make a covenant. You know what? Covenant is a promise. What kind of promise could we make to each other? So he says, I don't know. He says, promise to be a good friend? And I said, well, how about we both want to be good dads, good husbands, and really let Christ move in our lives. So why don't we covenant that we are committed, regardless of what happens, to help each other go all the way as a dad, husband, and in our workplace, to be all, just let Christ dominate in our life in those areas. And wherever I'm short as a husband and short as a dad or short in my job or whatever showing up, if there's anything I'm getting away from what Christ would want from me, that you'd confront me. He said, wow. He says, I don't know. He says, well, that's good for you to, you know, you can call me on that, but I can't. I mean, you're going, doing great, you know. I said, brother, we just need it together. So he said, okay. So we did. We made this commitment. I can remember the dining, the very place we were having breakfast. I'm sure, well, of course, it was today, today's day and age, with a lot of people would have watched, but we reached across and we held hands. Just kind of, well, held wrists, you know, we were there. And we just prayed. We committed before God. We got up, we both had kind of teary eyes, and so I said, this is going to mean something to us, Tom. So he says, yeah, I hope so. Well, we went on, kept studying and all the rest. About 2 months later, I suddenly thought, you know, nothing was happening as far as accountability, it seemed like. I mean, we were having a great time, we're growing and all the rest, talking about important things in our life, we're praying, real need areas, we're getting deeper and opening up more. We both felt really safe with each other. One time I said, you know, we've never confronted each other. Tom, if you did something that violated our covenant, how would you like me to share it with you? And he looked at me and I said, well, here he said, well, just shoot straight. I said, really? I said, let me tell you, I did this once with a person. I've done it with another one, several of them, but I said, I always found I did it once with them, and when I shared my observation, it wound up, I felt more hurt and vulnerable than he did. Because, you know what he did? He says, well, thanks, Paul. I'll pray about that for you, too. And so it wasn't a big rejection. But I thought, ooh, you know, it just hurt. And I said, I'm not going to share ever with this guy again. And I said, another thing is, it really scares me because 5 years ago, when I was a young staff person coming on, I saw a Christian leader. I was around him. And I said, I don't know what it was, but I was getting vibrations. I didn't like what I saw. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, I saw him the way he responded to some of the women. He was just kind of playing with them all the time and touching and laughing and hi and really huggy. And I said, then when he got up and spoke, I saw that there was a lot of pride, I guess to say. You know, he did it in a spiritual way, but took a lot of attention to himself for what was going on. And it bothered me. So I knew a couple guys that were his friends. So after a couple days later, I met some of those friends, and I said, you know, does anyone ever talk to, call him Bill, does anybody talk to Bill about some areas of his life? I mean, does he have any close relationships? And one guy says, well, no, not really. I said, what do you mean? He says, well, you don't get too close to Bill. He acts real friendly, but you don't really get close. I said, well, gee, that's too bad. He says, did you see something? And I said, yeah. He said, well, I bet I know what it is. And I said, you mean you see something too? And he says, yeah. He says, does it have to do with the way he relates to women and areas of pride? And I said, yeah. He says, yeah, I've seen it for several years. I said, why don't you go to him? He says, he's just not open. 5 years later, and this was that year that I was now getting close to Tom, this guy bombed out of a ministry and took half of it with him. It was a sad thing. And I thought to myself, there are areas in my life and your life that other people see, and they're just beginning. We're all not perfect, but other people see it. You do that all the time. You'll look at somebody and say, oh, look at him, look at her, or look at their marriage. It's just, you know, there's tension there. Do you notice it? But see, if you don't open your life up, no one will ever talk to you about it. And you are going to get worse. You'll never get better. And I said, Tom, I don't want you or anybody to ever say, well, I saw that. I knew it happened to Paul. I want you, as soon as you see something, I want you to tell me, brother, because I don't want it to go on in any area. Because if you do it, it's going to help me grow. It's going to take that out. I don't want to crash. I said, you know, the other day, I listed all the people that would be hurt or devastated if I ever fell in immoral sin. And I wrote out my kids. I wrote out all the friends. I wrote out, written out the people that we've discipled and close with. I got to 53 and stopped. And I thought, it would devastate them. I know there's some people that if that happened, first of all, my kids, and I had two of my sons were getting bigger than I would, and I know they'd come and just beat me to death probably, but because one of them ever said this, but we're talking about it was really cute. Oh, not so cute, but it was cute. The way we talked about a person who got off in immoral sin, went out and was having an affair with another woman, and we knew him. It was the first time our kids ever got that. And my son, who was 6'2" and about 220 at the time, he turned to me and he says, Dad, if you ever did that, he said, I said, don't tell me. I can see it. You know, that was powerful when I looked at that. So I said, Tom, I said, I want you, I want to really know you're serious about this. So he says, yeah, I'm serious. So I said, how do you want me to share it? He says, all right, wait until you see a little bit of a pattern. He says, then shoot straight with me. But he says, please don't preach when you do it. My mother used to do that all the time. She'd point something wrong out and she'd preach. I'm like, Mom, Mom, just tell me what's wrong. I said, okay, goes for me too. I said, you can even preach if you want, because I said, I'm so desperate to make sure that I finish well. I don't miss a beat on what God has for me. He said, okay. So we made this kind of talk. We prayed over it again, and, well, a couple months went by. Well, guess who was the first to have this tested. Well, it all happened. I got going, you know, I busy, and I'd been given a new responsibility for all of Europe. And so I was busy trying to get hold of some of these, you know, new countries and get up there and see our staff, and just really busy. It was the fall, got into basketball season in the wintertime. My one son was the oldest son. He had an older sister. But he was about 16, and he was a junior in high school, and we had moved him into an American school. So he was playing basketball. This was the winter, and he was doing real well. Well, as the beginning season started, they weren't supposed to have a very good team, and the other team, or it was, you know, whatever. And as the season went on, two teams began to emerge as the front runners. It was my son's team, our local high school, and this other team. And so, you know, the game is coming where the two are going to play. And so at the beginning of this week, the game was going to be Friday in Bonn, Germany, where we were, and everybody was talking about it. on Tuesday, I get a phone call from our staff up in Sweden, and a problem had come up and difficulties, and so we dealt with on the phone and back and forth. Wednesday, they called back. It's not worth, not getting any better. Thursday, called back, and it was critical. Well, I had to go there. I looked, and I went and talked to my son. I said, son, this thing, Paul is junior, it is. And so I said, Paul, I just, this problem, and I've got to go. I talked to Phyllis. We prayed a little bit about it. And so he said, oh, Dad, I understand. But it was the game. But he said, you know, no problem, Dad. You got to go, and I'll miss you, but, you know, it'd be great to have you here. But, you know, I know it's important you go. So Thursday afternoon, took off, and went up there. Dealt with the situation the whole weekend. Now, Friday night late, I called and found out they won. As a matter of fact, it was a tight game all the way, and my son Paul played a great game. Well, Tom had been gone all week traveling. He got home Friday, just enough time to throw down something and for supper, and ran over to the gymnasium. It was already packed. He looked around for me to sit with me, didn't know I had gone, hadn't talked with anybody, and he couldn't see me, so he just grabbed a seat and sat down. Well, that game was just absolutely exciting all the way, back and forth, as I said. And then the last half was even more exciting, and he watched and kept looking around for me, but figured they had an upper deck around there, and so he figured I was up behind and didn't want to leave, otherwise he'd lose his seat. So anyhow, the game was over, and they won by 2 points. And the place just was pandemonium. Everybody running down, hugging and throwing. So Tom worked his way, knew Paul real well, and he worked his way up to Paul, and he said, boy, Paul, great! And they hugged him, and he picked Tom up off the ground. They were all excited. Well, he put Tom down, and then looked at, and Tom said to him, well, where's your dad? He said, he had to go. Go where? He said, well, I had to go up to Sweden, and some deal came up, and he had to go. He said, you're kidding? He said, wow, what a game! What a time to be gone! And then somebody else came up and grabbed Paul, and off they went, and hugging and all the rest. Well, then, that all went, and I called, like I said, that night, and I flew home late Sunday night, and got in there, and then talked to Paul a little bit Monday morning, and, well, Tuesday morning, Tom and I met for breakfast, and so we're sitting there talking, and all of a sudden he says, he told me all about the game. He just thought it was so great, and he told how Paul played and all the rest, and then he said, boy, he says, man, why weren't you there? He says, it's just a great one. I said, well, I just had to go with this. I tried to avoid it. He says, boy, but man, I can't understand it. So I'm sure you prayed about it. I said, well, we did pray about it. I don't know. It's one of those things you pray about, and I'm not sure. But I just felt I had to do that. And he put his head down and just kind of went like this. I said, Tom, do you think I shouldn't have gone? He says, and he looked up and he said, no. He said, buddy, you blew it. You really blew it. He says, if there's anything, he says, the President of the United States could have called you. You had to be there. I said, well, I mean, what do you mean? He says, how do you know that? He says, when I walked up and hugged that son of yours and said, where's your dad? He says, I could read it in his eyes. And he said, you have worked so much with those kids. And he says, you've played basketball without him. You've got worked with him. He said, Paul, there's no one else in that whole stand or any of this place that he wanted in that stand but you. And he said, you really blew it. And I said, and then he says, and because I'm committed to you, I want to tell you, you're blowing it with your whole all the kids. I said, what do you mean? He says, ever since you've gotten this new job, he says, you're running all over. He says, you've gone those three laps with those older kids, and you're in the fourth lap. And he says, you're going to blow it at the finish. He says, you love those kids, they love you, but he says, you're going to blow it. You're just traveling too much. You're into it. And he says, you got to stop. I said, well, how do I handle this? He says, go back and talk to Paul. I said, well, I already did. I talked to him. He says, it's okay. He says, talk to him again. So we kind of worked through a little strategy and what I could say. So I go home. I thought about it all day, praying about it, called Phyllis. And she says, well, sweetheart, I know it was hard. Don't be hard on yourself. But see, it was a dad. He knew. Tom knew. So I got home early, waiting for the kids, and his older sister comes in, Debbie. So Debbie and Paul are real good friends as well. So I said, Deb, come on in the living room. So I came in, and I said, sweetheart, I'm thinking of really reevaluating my traveling, and I've been traveling a lot. What do you think? So, well, Dad, I know you got a lot to do, and, you know, it's a big job. And I said, I know that, but I said, what do you think? He said, well, you are traveling an awful lot, Dad. I said, well, also, I said, just to back up a little bit, I said, this last weekend, I really feel like I really made a mistake. I should have been here. What do you think? Because we had talked about approaching it that way. And she said, oh, Dad. She said, you really should have been here. He said, Paul really wanted you there. I said, why didn't he say it? He said, Dad, he loves you too much. He's not going to say it. So I said, well, how do you know? He says, Dad, he says, he came home after the game. Everybody else was happy. And he was just kind of just talking a little bit, working around, sat in his bed a little bit. And he said, Dad, he was really hurt. And he said, but you talk to him. You'll see. I said, well, I did. I said, well, you be here. You be here when I talk to him. So Paul came in about a half hour later. I called him in the living room and I said, hey, Paul, come on in for a second. I said, I'm thinking of reevaluating my traveling. I've been gone a lot. I said, what do you think? Debbie was just giving me some input. I said, how about you? He says, oh, Dad, he says, you got a new job. It's a challenge. You got to go for it. And no problem. I said, son, I don't think that's true. I said, even this weekend, I think I really blew it. I shouldn't have been there. I said, what do you think? He says, oh, Dad, he says, we've already talked about this. He kind of put his head down like this. I said, well, I think I should have been there. I just want to ask you, just tell you, confess that I really blew it. And all of a sudden he just looked up and he's a big guy. And big tears running down his eyes. He said, Dad, I wish you were there. Well, yeah, then, oh boy. Now what do I do? So I said, well, son, could you guys help me? Help me figure out what I could do? I said, well, sure. And then Paul, having got his composure back, he turned to me and he says, Dad, it's not just the game. We've lost you. We've lost you. I said, what do you mean? He says, oh, the last 3-4 months, ever since you've had this job, you're on the phone in the evening, your mind's off there. He says, it's not just that you're gone, but he says, when you're here, you're gone, Dad. You're all caught up with it. He says, I can hardly talk to you anymore. And I said, boy. So, I asked Phyllis to come in. We kind of had a little family powwow, and we talked it through. I said, that you helped me understand the key dates and times, but I said, boy, this is terrific. I'll go to work with this. So I called Tom up. We met the next morning, told him about this whole thing. We're both sitting there crying at the breakfast table, you know. The reason I want to tell you this is this. That little incident literally changed my whole pattern of traveling. It opened up the door to other things that I wasn't sensitive with the kids. It was a turning point for those older teenagers, and it spilled down to our younger kids as they got older. It has still impacted my life today. What would have happened if I didn't have Tom in my life? See, my wife wouldn't have said that because Phyllis is, she knew I was traveling a lot. She'd give me feedback, but she knows my heart. She knows what has to be done, and it's not so easy for her to say that. There are a couple of times she says, sweetheart, I think you need to get a little more time with Paul or something like that. And I said, oh, yeah, right. But see, you need somebody who is safe and trust you, who can just get in there and just speak to it. And I just hope, after all I've said, that, you know, as you look at these kind of relationships, and as you look at this whole series of these things here, that when you look at them, that in the back, I think it's either the back page or second back page, I've got a little sheet there for you, if you could turn to that. What page is that? What is it? Yes. Page 11. Please just do this for me. Take time to do a little relational inventory. So, you know, it's here, sitting here just like this, and you say, okay, Got that little picture there. Who is really in my life? Put a name down. You see, I've got a spiritual guide, and I'll just put the first initial there. Right now, I'm a coach to several, but I've got a counselor in my life. I've got two of them, S and W. Boy, models I'm building on that. I've told you about George Mueller. I've told you about a couple others. Right now, Lauren Sanney is helping me because, you know, we're having grandchildren, a couple more are coming. We're talking about how do you be a father to your kids once they're all out? I've never been there before. So he's a great model. He's also a coach for me. Both. Got him in my life. Write them down. Now, how about those peer relationships? Be honest. Now, I asked you, how many people have these kinds of relationships I talked about? This close brother and sister. How many really have them? Women and men. Well, it turns out, by my inventory, is about 1 to 2 women and hardly even one man. Yes, some men have 1 or 2. But, I mean, these are guys that you could share anything with and they'll be in there with you. They won't even blink an eyelash. The commitment's already there. And these guys, if I ever walk out, you know, we've committed ourselves, we've laughed about it a little bit, but we said if one of us ever take the wrong step and get off of the Lord, we will not stop. We'll camp out on each other's stairway. If I ever left Phyllis, these guys will travel everywhere with me. They'll find me. When they find me, they'll camp out at me, they'll pray, they'll jab me, they'll talk me, they'll throw me in a cab and take me home. Phyllis says, I'm so glad they're in his life. You see, that's important. And it's great to have a gal as well. Now, sometimes people say, well, does that interfere with your relationship with your wife? No, it doesn't at all. The priority is still Phyllis. And she knows that. She's got to have that. But take an inventory. Are there some good friends over here that you could make even better friends? And is there one of those that I could maybe pray about and move a little closer into this layer? You don't need a lot of friends, but you need some covenant ones. You need some people that you're hanging out with. All of these don't know to be here. They won't. You can usually just have one, maybe two at a time. And just take an inventory there. And then, you know, is there somebody in your life here? Is there somebody that you can give yourself away to? Just start with one. Just start with a pray with some young person or whatever it is. And some of you folks, if you need, you know, an upper mentor, what are those areas? This is the thing that I feel, if we all do that and keep track on it, keep thinking about it, it will literally change your life. As I quoted at the beginning, the quality of your life will be determined by the quality of your friendships. But you can go even deeper to say, how well you finish, the impact you make in this life will be determined by your friendships, both ones that will input on your life and the ones you'll give away yourselves to. And to that end, I commit myself to you, and let me pray. Father, we are weak people. Yes, we have strengths. We have gifts. We have the Lord Jesus and the Holy Spirit within us. We have the Word of God. But Lord, you put us on this earth, and the first thing out of your mouth that we have recorded in Scripture after you created the first creation was, man should not live alone. We need others. We were born with needs for others. Paul went on to say that the body of Christ, it's there, and we need everybody. And you've got gifts, and I've got gifts, but we don't have enough gifts. We've got to come together. We've got to help each other. We need relationships to make it as men and women, and to be strong, and to be effective, to be godly. We need friends just for fun. We need friends that will be honest and safe. So I just pray, Lord Jesus, you know where we are, every one of us. Help us to just make a good inventory and listen to you and get started. Take a step of initiative. And I commit each of us to that end and pray this in the powerful name of Jesus. Amen.